Good afternoon. This is the Committee on Health and Human Services and Housing. It's held in room 15, and today is January 12th. Right?
Got that right?
Welcome to the Health and Human Services Policy Committee, everybody. This year we have an hour and a half hearing. So we will be even more efficient and asking you to be more efficient as we move through and hear the various bills so that we not only get the essence and the content of being presented, but it offers time for the legislators here to ask you questions. Before we get going, though, for today's presentation, I want to introduce to you Liam Monahan. Liam is our new analyst for the committee, and I've asked him just to tell the committee something about him and the audience something about him before we move forward with the agenda.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a St. Paul native, graduate of Breck School. I attended Duke University, where I got a BA in philosophy. I also have a PhD in philosophy from Notre Dame. I was a university professor for many years before deciding I wanted to do something different, so I attended the Humphrey School. I haven't quite finished up the program there, but I will soon. And my role here for this committee is to help the senators with long-term care issues, nursing home issues, including rates, staffing, and classification, waivered services, personal care assistant, and community first services and supports, non-emergency medical transportation, intermediate care facilities, rate increases for providers of services to persons with developmental disabilities, MA liens, and a few issues with the Department of Health.
Wow. Just a little list of things. You need a philosophy major to put up with that kind of an agenda. All righty. With that, we're going to proceed with today's agenda. I'm very appreciative that everybody is here to hear the report from the task force appointed by Governor Dayton to review and make recommendations for changes in the child protection system in the state of Minnesota. You should have received a copy of the report, of the summary report. We wanted to send that to you early. I would just say that if there's materials that any of you want distributed before you have bills heard or reports that need to go out ahead of time, would you let us know? It's a way of helping us get through our shorter committee hearings if you're able to take some time to review the material beforehand and be prepared to hear the presentation. Today we're listening to some of the initial recommendations of the Governor's Task Force on the Protection of Children. Protection of children is the priority of this task force above all else. And we're going to begin today with our Commissioner Lucinda Jessen from the Minnesota Department of Human Services. And our Commissioner is the co-chair of the Governor's Task Force on the Protection of Children, with Commissioner Tony Carter, who will be presenting later during this presentation. So please come to the table and begin. The commission will be followed by Kathy Johnson, who's the director of Kitson County Social Services. So, Kathy, if you could, move up and help us with our time.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. My name is Lucinda Jessen. I'm Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Human Services, and it's a delight to be here with you today. In my opening comments, I'm going to provide some context for the overall task force report and also just give you a very incredibly short reminder of how our child protection system works today, because I think that will be helpful to understand the recommendations.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I, in an effort to make sure we use every minute of time to hear about the report, I forgot to say, and I want to apologize to Senator Rosen, who has served on this task force, appointed by the governor to serve on this task force, as well as myself. So we are your representatives on the task force. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, over the last 6 or 7 months, through the media, through a series in the Star Tribune, frankly through the Adrian Peterson case, which has been featured in many places, we have seen a real light shining on our child protection system in this state. I think that's a very good thing. Child's death from maltreatment, whether or not that child was ever part of our child protection system, it should be the top of the front page, the most emailed story, it should cause us all to question what we can do better in the future. But it's also, I think, a good thing to have the light shining on this system because this our child protection system, which, as I will remind you all, is a county-administered, state-supervised system, and with state supervision that the Office of Legislative Auditor in 2012 said was structurally a weak system of supervision. But that is a system that is cloaked by laws that require a lot of secrecy. Secrecy that protects families in some instances from unfounded, unjust allegations, but secrecy that also stands in the way, sometimes of robust examination. You know, I want to be really clear. Our child protection system today saves and protects thousands of children every year. We have hardworking frontline county child protection workers that have a job that is much harder than mine, making tough decisions in sometimes gray areas. But those of us who understand how the child protection system, that understand the numbers, the thousands of children we protect, also understand that our system is failing some children, and frankly, failing too many children. And that is why Governor Dayton issued the executive order creating this task force, and I believe you have a copy of that executive order in your packet. But just to remind everyone, the purpose of the task force is to review our current child welfare system. So that's the pre-court part of our system. And the governor put together a very aggressive timeline and said he wanted initial recommendations in three areas by the end of December, which you have before you. And that's to look at some of these pre-court protocols like screening decisions and family assessment. Are they adequate? Are they being adhered to? Does the system have the capacity and resources it needs? And to look at whether or not there's adequate supervisory oversight of the county and local practices. And then there are a number, if you turn to the second page, of additional things the governor wants the task force to weigh in on before the end of March. So it's a short period of time, and we have a task force that is working incredibly hard. Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, as both of you all know. The governor wanted to make sure that there was a real diversity of opinion on this task force. So you will see, and I believe in your package, there's a list of all the folks who are on the task force. You're going to see physicians, you're going to see law enforcement, legislators, obviously, child advocacy experts, really great county-level human services directors. But let me just say, there are people who have very different opinions about how our child protection system can be improved. And that has led to robust and, I think, really good discussions, members. We have Commissioner Carter and I divided the task force into three work groups to look at three key areas. And you'll hear the specific recommendations from each of those work groups. They're led by former Chief Justice Kathleen Blatz. That's one. Human Service Director Kathy Johnson from Kitson County leads another. And Dr. Mark Hudson, who's also here with us, leads another. Let me just say a couple of things, though I think will help you understand those recommendations when you hear them. You know, one, I just do want to start out by saying that a fresh look at our child protection system, which I think is so critical, also from my perspective, means that we need a fresh look at the Department of Human Services. So I do want to let you know that we have a new Assistant Commissioner of Children and Families, Jim Koppel. And we also have, as of last April, a new director, Jamie Sorensen, of our Child Safety and Permanency Division. Both of them are bringing, I think, a fresh perspective that, together with the task force, will lead to some real improvements in the future. So let me provide some of that context I was talking about. And I think just a very high-level overview, and Madam Chair, since Rose and I especially know from your work on the task force, you could probably do this even better than I could, but how does our screening and referral system work today so you can understand the changes that are being proposed, but also to say a little bit about how that has changed over the last 15 years. And then finally, a few words about why the task force believes that a readjustment of that system is called for. So I have just a couple of slides to give you a very brief amount of background. The first is, and you have these in your handouts, I think only a couple of them actually made it to the screen, but you have handouts. And the first is just to remind everyone about these reports, and reports come in, you know, to counties and tribes. They can come in from mandated reporters. They can come in from neighbors, from family members, reports of maltreatment. So what I'm showing you here are the screened-in reports. And I just thought this was important to remind everyone that the vast majority of screened-in reports are for neglect. But on the other hand, neglect, chronic neglect, can be a serious problem. We're not minimizing that. Then physical abuse, then sexual abuse, and then mental injury and medical neglect. I just thought that might be helpful context. And the next slide, let's see. Can we go to that? Maybe it's here. I thought this might be useful just to walk everyone through how our child protection, the front-end child protection system, works today. So first, in moving from your left, a call is received by that county worker or a tribal worker. And that in today's system, that county or tribal worker needs to make a decision. And that basic decision is, do we screen in the decision? And that's basically supposed to be the decision. Do the facts, as they're told to that county worker, do they meet the legal requirements? So, because the law says, here's what should, it basically gives guidance, and then the department has other guidance about what should be screened in. And just so you know, about 30% of those reports overall are screened in. And then if they're screened out, that's about 70% that you see falling off the chart. And then once that decision is made, and sometimes at the same time, the decision is made, well, what pathway does this report take? And, you know, and that's really where that worker looks at the information provided, looks at the definition first of what counts as substantial child endangerment, because there are two tracks or two paths today. One is this traditional family investigation track, and that is we're going to work with law enforcement, we're going to do this kind of in some ways forensic investigation to determine if is the child safe, did maltreatment occur. And often a lot of those can end up in court proceedings and in a number of them with children removed from their homes. Or the second possibility is what we would call a family assessment. And this is a track where the worker is to go in and look, assess for safety, assess for risk of the future, but also look at the family's strengths and weaknesses and the child well-being. The idea is to work more proactively with the family in these cases. So let me just take the family assessment track first, which you'll kind of find at the bottom of your chart. So, and I would say a little more than 70% of cases, when they're screened in, are tracked to the family assessment track. And then the assessment itself, that evaluation, is required. Families have to go through that, or they end up being, you know, referred to courts often. But then the decision is made, and you'll see that box, child protection services needed. And that's a question. And some of those cases then are going back to, let's consult with law enforcement, with the county attorney, and see if we need to proceed to court. So, and it's really that opportunity to maybe change track, say, look, there's more here than we were to concern us than we thought. So you can have, and we have about 16% of those cases then actually end up going back. But 84-85% of those cases, then they'll go and say to the family, look, we think you need some help and supportive services, and we're offering them to you. And those are the family gets to choose to accept those or not. And then ultimately those cases are closed. And if you look at the family investigation track, after the investigator goes out, looks at safety, looks at the risk for future maltreatment, and makes a determination, did maltreatment occur? And of those cases today that are in our family investigation track, about 54%, so over 50% of them, there's a finding that maltreatment occurred. And then there's a decision made, do we, you know, offer services and close the case, or do we send those, consult with the county attorney, and send those to a possible court proceeding? I know that was pretty quick, but you're going to hear a lot about screening decisions, what goes to family assessment, should we have two tracks, should we have one track, what are the lens, how should we do this, and I thought this overview might be possible. It is possible, helpful. And you'll be hearing from people who have a lot more expertise in it than I do, Madam Chair and members. But when we look at that flow chart and we're thinking about child protection and child safety, I think we all know that it doesn't exist in a vacuum, that poverty, poor nutrition, lack of living stability, mental health issues, there's so many things that play critical roles. And I think one of the other things that our task force is dealing with is the racial disparities, We have significant disparities about who's reported within the system and in our out-of-home placement statistics. So I wanted to show you, and they're in your packet, and I apologize, we somehow didn't get them translated to the screen, just some of the of those numbers. And you can come back to these, Madam Chair, members. So the first slide where it says child maltreatment reports by response category, do you all look at that? This is a slide that will show you a change that has happened over time. And that is, if you look at this, what you see is that overall the number of these total investigations and assessments mostly steady, going up a little. But that over this past 10-year period, we've seen the number of cases that go into family investigation go down. And we've seen the number of cases that go the family assessment path go significantly up. And I think you'll also hear that in about 2005, when this started, the legislature added, there was a provision in the law that said that family assessment shall be the preferred track. And so you see that playing out here, Madam Chair, members. And then if you go to the next slide, you'll see, this is a slide that talks about maltreatment determinations. So those are those cases where maltreatment has been found. And you will see disparities, especially among American Indian families and amongst African American families. And if you turn to the next page, it is probably not surprising then that you also see disparities in out-of-home placements. You will see the number of out-of-home placements going down somewhat overall and for most families across the last 10 years, but you will see significantly in the last 5 years the number of out-of-home placements for American Indian families going up. So just a little background before we kind of go into the task force determinations, but I think that will give you kind of some sense, and you'll hear more from the work group leads. But I just wanted to take a few minutes and talk about just the general approach the task force took. And if you have the task force report in front of you, this is really reflected in the preamble to the task force. And one of the reasons I wanted to share with you how the system works today and what has really moved within that system of movement to significantly more families being in the family assessment track as opposed to the investigation track, because it really, I think, relates to where the task force saw the need to, as they would say, readjust the pendulum. So the preamble starts out by making the point that we have seen a real shift, that we have in some ways moved from one end of a spectrum to another. A spectrum where, 15 or more years ago, it was very much, the child protection system was first and foremost about working with law enforcement, about doing these forensic investigations, and in a way that didn't engage families and communities very often, and that was a real missing piece. And that's very necessary. But we've gone now to another end of the spectrum, I think the task force would say, where we our primary focus has become family engagement, and that has become at times paramount, and that we need to readjust the pendulum, that we need to understand that there are kind of a continuum of approaches and services that are necessary and appropriate. And I think, and you can read the preamble yourself, but I think what the end of the day, where the task force has come down, is just saying, look, when we're looking at our child protection system, we need to start and end with what is best for the child. We need to think about what is in that child's best interest. Now, of course, we know that having a supportive family, an intact family, wherever possible, is in the child's best interest. And we know the cultural competency of providers is in the child's best interest, the community engagement's in the child's best interest, but we need to start with a child, and we need to think, and we need safety to be a paramount part of those decisions. And I hope when you hear the recommendations that we have so far and about some of the important and work we have ahead that Commissioner Carter will share with you, you'll see that reflected, that child-first approach reflected in our recommendations. I do want to just note one other thing that I think will help you through this discussion, and that is the chart. It's Exhibit B to our report. And I really thank the folks at the department who put this together, and the task force made some good suggestions on it and adopted it. And what you see for every recommendation is, does this recommendation require statutory change, change in practice, in training? Is there fiscal impact to either the county or the state? We thought this would be helpful to everyone. And I also want to note that a number of the recommendations relate to the need for more guidance and different guidance to sometimes from the Department of Human Services, and to let the committee know that we will be this month issuing guidance that starts to put a lot of these recommendations into practice. So with that, Madam Chair, I would turn it over to our work group leads, but I'm happy to stay here and answer any questions.
Just one moment. I just want to go back and say, in case you didn't figure out which this last, I think this would be a really helpful document. Keep this in your folder, because I may have failed to mention that today we're simply going to hear from the task force and the work and the questions that have so far been addressed and what is yet to come in preparation for the hearing on the bill that's coming forward a week from Wednesday. And so hold on to these things, and they'll be helpful to you in that hearing. And then, Commissioner, I wonder if you would describe how you organized the work and then draw the relationship between that and the presenters that you're inviting to come forward now.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we have three different work groups. And we have a work group headed by Kathy Johnson on supervision and training. That was one of the things the governor wanted us to specifically look at. And so we had all of our work group, all of our task force members give us their top two choices as far as the top two work groups they would want to be on. So we're able to have everyone on either their first or second choice. And so everyone ends up being on one work group, every member does. And we tried to have in each of those work groups as best we can a variety of opinions, geographic differences as well, because the challenges in Greater Minnesota are different often, than they are in the metro. So I gave a charge, Commissioner Carter and I gave a charge to each of those work groups, including when we wanted reports and recommendations back from them. But then those recommendations from the work groups were very thoroughly discussed at the task force meetings, as Madam Chair, you and Senator Rosen know. So it's not like we're just rubber stamping those, and they will sometimes bring issues to us and get task force input on what we know are tough issues, and then take that back to the work group. And the work groups have their own meetings, and they have bring in people to testify before them, and they've been doing a lot of soliciting of information themselves. And I do really just particularly want to, as I said before, thank our work group leads, to Kathy with Chief Flats. Chief Flats couldn't be here today, but she's been a great leader in this as well. Judith Brumfolf is who is on that committee, will be sharing the recommendations, and Dr. Hudson.
And even though you've come forward, Ms. Johnson, do you think in order for us to understand the work that the order of the task force presentations makes a difference? Can we start with training, or should we start with screening?
I would leave that up to you, Madam Chair, what you would
consider. I think your presentation certainly sort of stands on its own, but then I think we'll do screening and then family assessment. Okay, thank you. Please introduce yourself and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Again, my name is Kathy Johnson. I'm the director of Kitson County Social Services, but I'm also the granddaughter of a Danish immigrant who proudly served in the Minnesota House of Representatives from 1953 to 1958. He taught us, his grandchildren, to love this country and to love this state. I'm therefore truly honored to appear before you today. My home county of Kitson is the northwest corner of Minnesota and has approximately 4,500 residents spread across 1,100 square miles. As a comparison, Hennepin County has 1.2 million residents spread across 607 square miles. Thus, Hennepin has 267 times more residents than Kitson County, spread across half the space. It might appear that Hennepin and Kitson counties may not have much in common, yet we are both proud counties of Minnesota and have the duty to serve our residents through our programs, with the most important one being the protection of our youngest residents from abuse and neglect. We understand the daunting task this committee has in trying to set policies that will be effective and fit the needs of all Minnesota counties and tribes. I am honored to have been appointed by Governor Dayton to serve on the Task Force for the Protection of Children, and I am also honored to serve as a Task Force Work Group Chair for Training and Supervision of Practice. Our work group has been given four charges. We are to critique and deliberate on those charges as to whether or not they are currently adequate in meeting the present needs of the child protection system. Our first charge is to review the qualifications of child protection staff. Our group is reviewing the process for qualifying staff through the merit system, which is used by the majority of counties in the hiring process. I believe it's 17 counties that do not use the merit system but use their own in-house human resources for this process. But these procedures must also be reviewed by the merit system and deemed adequate to meet the necessary procedures for qualifying candidates for county social work positions. We therefore are focusing on just the merit system candidate qualifying process to determine its adequacy. This charge has also brought up the discussion of county applicants being allowed to fill social work positions with educational backgrounds of social work or related degrees. I believe this committee is familiar with that discussion as per the licensing of social workers and counties' fears of diminishing the pool of applicants that is already scarce in many areas of the state, especially in those more rural counties. We will be hearing from the Minnesota Board of Social Work at our next meeting and have some more discussion on this issue. Our second charge is to review the workforce challenges and opportunities of our present child protection system. We have discussed the difficulty in attracting candidates to the far reaches of the state and have looked at ways to address this issue. We have discussed the possible recommendation to the state legislature on the implementation of a student loan forgiveness program for social workers, with a priority being given to candidates who would choose to work in the state's rural areas. This, again, is something that we are considering and deliberating on. We are also assessing the current caseload size of child protection workers. We have noted that while the legislature has in past put statute on the maximum caseload size for some social service programs, there has not been a specific child protection caseload number stated in statute. Social workers who have reported to the task force and to our work group have repeatedly stated that they do not have enough time to meet the needs of their families, to do the necessary paperwork that's required of them, and then also to be able to attend trainings and workshops. Our work group is considering this recommendation that a maximum child protection caseload be set by the legislature. We have discussed the issue of retention of child protection workers, and we are hopeful that a student loan forgiveness program would also address this issue. Our third charge is to look at the training adequacy of child protection workers in the present system. Our work group has submitted our initial recommendations to the governor, which includes the addition of a more focused child protection training and the recommendation that child protection supervisors be required to attend child protection training for supervisors, which is not currently required of them. Our work group continues to discuss the adequacy of the current mandated reporters training. We are considering recommending that the legislature would ask the various licensing boards to add the requirement of mandated reporter training to the certification to the license renewal of these various professionals. Our fourth and final charge is to review the adequacy of program supervision and oversight. Currently, counties' child protection programs are being audited in five separate review processes. These include the Child and Family Services Review, the monthly reviews of county screening decisions, the Human Services Performance Management System, county citizen review panels, and the Child Mortality Review Team. We are deliberating on the adequacy of these reviews and are looking at ways we may strengthen and improve the effectiveness of these review programs. Our work group is also deliberating and will possibly recommend the creation of a new outside independent review of child protection practices. We will be reviewing other such review practices and hope to have a recommendation by March. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we'll just continue to move through the reports of the various subgroups, and then I'm hoping that you'll, if you have questions, you'll write them down so that we stay. These groups have been broken down according to certain tasks, so we don't want to cross the questions over before they've had a chance to present. Okay, thank you so much. Our next presenter is Judith Broomfield. Many of you are familiar with Judith. She's the director at Scott County Health and Human Services and a member of the Screening and Transparency Work Group. Thank you for coming and presenting.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As stated, I'm Judith Broomfield. I'm the Health and Human Services Director in Scott County. I'm here today, though, representing the task force, not representing either Scott County or counties in Minnesota at this point. As Kathy Johnson said, I'm honored to have been appointed by the governor to this task force. I'm also honored that my fellow counties believe that I could represent them well. It is a privilege to look at this issue. As the commissioner said, we really do have a system that saves the lives of many thousands of children every year. But any time a child dies who's known to our system or who might have been known to our system that possibly should have been known to our system, it's a failure. And we do need to look at that. So I really appreciate the opportunity that we have to look at our system as it exists today and how we might improve it. I truly believe we can have an even stronger system going forward, especially with your assistance as a legislative body. So I am going to present to you the recommendations at this point of the Screening and Transparency Work Group. The charge to that work group was that we review all of the child protection intake practices and screening guidelines, that we consider the results of random screening audits conducted by the Department of Human Services to inform current screening practices, that we evaluate the use of prior child protection history and previous reports of maltreatment in the screening process, that we review cross-reporting of law enforcement and child protection, that we examine the use of team decisions and supervision as well as the qualifications of the screening staff, and that we review mandated reporter obligations under the law and how the system responds to such reports. The transparency part of the screening and transparency work group will really take more action on in the next 3 months, but our responsibility there is to identify opportunities to increase transparency of child protection practices and accountability of the child protection system. It should also consider how data should be identified and collected and published at both the state and the local levels. So with that charge, we really went into it initially to say, what can we do quickly? What are the low-hanging fruit? What are the things that are of particular importance that we can fairly rapidly come to some conclusion about? And what are the things that we really need to spend a little bit more time on before our final recommendations? The initial report then contains 13 screening recommendations and 3 high-level transparency recommendations, because, again, that's one we'll need to spend more time on as we begin to see how we would configure the entire system. We used several guiding principles as we began our work. One was that the revisions need to reflect the core purpose of protecting children. The screening decision should be made by more than one individual, and that screening decisions should be based on all available information. With those guiding principles, we moved ahead to recommendations that at this point, for the most part, are preliminary and will be further configured as we go along and may even be changed slightly. Some of these decisions or recommendations will need legislative action, and those will be coming before you. Some might be implemented by the Department of Human Services or may need legislative action. Others clearly could be implemented by the Department of Human Services at this time. So what I'm going to try to do is organize those 13 recommendations into those 3 categories, beginning with which ones will require legislative action on your part. The first one is actually recommendation number one, which is to repeal the statutory provision barring consideration of screened-out reports. We believe the use of prior screened-out reports when considering a new referral should be permitted and encouraged as an essential part of the screening process. Records of screening of screened-out reports should then be maintained for 5 years in order to allow that consideration to happen. There was strong feeling that this is a critical change that needs to happen quickly rather than waiting for the rest of the recommendations, and I believe that will come forward fairly rapidly as a systemic change that's very important to us. The second one, also requiring legislative action, is to revise the public policy statement in the Minnesota Reporting of Maltreatment Act. Currently, that public policy statement does put forward family assessment as a preferred mode, and it relates fairly strongly to families. While we believe families are critically important, we believe that this public policy statement should be changed to specify that the child protection is foremost and the child's best interest needs to come first. The work group did feel that there wasn't sufficient emphasis on the protection of the child and the child's best interest within this policy statement. The third recommendation, which is actually number 9 in the report, is to clarify the statutory provisions addressing the release of data to mandated reporters to state that child protection agencies must provide relevant private data to mandated reporters who make the report who have an ongoing responsibility for the health, education, or welfare of the child affected by the data. Also, the group recommended further consideration of releasing additional information to other mandated reporters who may have the same activity with the child but who were not actually the reporter in this particular circumstance. Also, the task force will need to review the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act to see if there are issues there that need to be changed in order to make it easier to release additional information to mandated reporters. Currently, by statute, mandated reporters do receive specific minimal information when they make a report, but the work group stressed the role of other providers in assuring child safety and the needs to increase the sharing of this information with those people who are actively working with the child and the family. Another recommendation is number 10 that would require legislative action, and that would require county agencies to use the screening guidelines at least as a floor for the decision-making and have increased reviews and quality assurance to provide oversight. Any modification of the screening guidelines must be approved by the Department of Human Services.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Judy. I'm going to go back to what you just described as the release of data to mandated reporters and then further being encouraged to provide communications to other mandated reporters. To really crystallize that, could you give an example of what you're talking about that might be an other mandated reporter? That you would want to release information that was not necessarily reported. So like a teacher makes a report, would the school administration or be the other reporter, or can you crystallize that?
Yes, Madam Chair, that's exactly right. Let me give you an example where we receive a report of a child being injured, and that report may come from the physician. The physician, by statute, receives information about whether or not that report was accepted for screening and information about the finding of that report. But it is relatively minimal information, and there is no release of information to anyone else who might be working with that child without the family's consent to release information. What we're proposing is potentially, and again, we need to look at the Data Practices Act and see how that would work within that framework. But potentially, when the doctor makes the report, there would be additional information going back to the doctor besides a very minimal report, and perhaps a school teacher or a daycare provider, so that they knew this report had come in, that it was being assessed, and the results of the assessment.
Thank you. Is that clarification?
Just to, yes. Actually, right to that point, the very first word of this, the recommendation number 9, is clarification, which would lead one to believe that it's not really changing current practice. What I heard you just describe is a fairly significant change to current practice, so it's not really a clarification.
Madam Chair,
Blumfield.
Senator Laurie, it is both. If you expand it to beyond the reporter, that's a significant change. The other change would be increasing the amount of information given. The statute is not very clear at this point about exactly how much information can be given. So many counties give them minimal information. Some give a little bit more. The statute in that respect is not very clear. So it's probably both clarification and addition.
Okay, great. Thank you. Please continue. You were on item 10, I think, which was about the screening use of screening guidelines.
Correct. The reports received by the task force is that there's a wide variation in county practice in terms of how reports are screened in or screened out. And a number of areas really reflect this recommendation. A number of presenters to the task force felt that there was so much variation. Some counties use clearly the screening guidelines from the department. Some have made amendments to those screening guidelines. So it was a belief of the task force that those guidelines needed to be the floor, that a county could screen in more than that, but should not be more restrictive than the screening guidelines, but felt that this needed to be clarified in statute that counties must follow, at a very minimum, the screening guidelines. They could take more, but not less. Moving on then to recommendation number 12, which is the next one that we believe would absolutely require legislative action. It was to amend the statutory definition of physical abuse set forth in statute to delete the language, in quotes, that are done in anger or without regard to the safety of the child. Instead, the statute should simply state that, quote, actions which are not reasonable and moderate include but not limited to any of the following, and then there's a list of actions. It was the belief of the work group in this respect that the modification in statute done in anger or without regard to the safety of the child really talked more toward motivation or intent rather than action, and that it should be deleted from statute. The next one, recommendation number 13, was to broaden the statutory definition of substantial child endangerment, which requires a child protection investigation, going back to this chart, the investigation, as a response. It was recommended that the department create additional substantial child endangerment criteria on research-based vulnerability factors, such as the child's age, vulnerability, and the presenting dangerousness of the report. The work group felt that children aged 5 and under were particularly vulnerable and that reports of any kind of maltreatment for children in that age group should receive heightened scrutiny at the very beginning of the assessment phase. There were other recommendations.
To this clarification questions at this time, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering if you want us to wait till the end, I can, because I got hung up on number 12 when you started to talk about intent and versus the how or the what. And, you know, there's some inconsistencies I see here. If you look at the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act, for example, there's some due process rights that are in there regarding people who might have some cognitive issues when it comes to understanding their intent or understanding what's going on here. And I'm asking on behalf of folks like that, if you have had that conversation as a group, if you have, I'd like to know the methodology as to why you get to the intent, getting rid of the intent and just the action itself, because sometimes, and we can spread this out even into MSOP. There's some issues there concerning with the intent piece of it. And so I just would like to understand your methodology behind that.
Madam
Chair. Ms. Blumfield.
Senator Hoffman, these are the screening criteria, and so the thinking of the task force with regard to this recommendation is looking at child safety. You really needed to look at the action. The intent comes into consideration when you're talking about how do you respond, what do you do, and that really would deal with those who may have the cognitive issues or who may have actually done something to harm their child, but they really didn't mean to hurt them. When it's in this portion of the statute, it would allow you to screen out if you believe that there was not an intent to harm, even though harm may have occurred. So it really deals only with the screening, not how you would then provide services to that individual.
Senator Hoffman, what we're trying to do here today is present what the recommendations are and the rationale.
Okay.
But the bill itself will be presented with the language where we can talk about that. But I think that what the task force is saying is the child first, that in child protection, in that arena, when we're in that arena, that the question is about was the child harmed, not was the perpetrator intending to do it or not intending to do it or cognitively impaired or under the influence of chemical. Those questions are not the question in a child protection system. It is the child safe? Then the second system, if I understand correctly, is a determination, for example, if they're directed to file family assessment, as you'll learn, the social services will come in to provide social service supports to that caregiver so that they can change the processes they're using and restore an environment of safety for the child. But at this point, at the screening point, the question is all the child first. The child, what the child is experiencing, not the perpetrator. Is that a fair reflection? Yes.
And
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just thank you for the clarification. In the case of a child who might be a minor, I just want to reflect on there's still some a child is a minor in this case, and it may be that whether that be a perpetrator or the victim itself, but I agree. The child first. The question is, what happened? But there's still got to be some due. We have to intend that there's due process rights for the victim, due process rights for just the whole process itself. So I will withhold until we see the bill.
I think as we move to the assessment process, if you look at the graph that the commissioner gave us that showed you that there's a decision made in the screening process as to which track we go. If it's family assessment, which is a social service support system, or through a court system, which is the investigation system. And that's not what we're talking about right now. We're talking about this first call that comes in from a trained screener, hopefully. We're going to improve that. And then the determinations. And there's language that needs strengthening here in order for it to become clear for the person making those decisions how to track. I don't know if we're using that term or not, but what the next step will be. So please continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next group of recommendations fall into the category of they may need legislative action. They may also be within the purview of the department at this point to simply go forward with these recommendations. The first one is actually number 5 in the report, which is send all reports of maltreatment to law enforcement regardless of whether the report is screened in or screened out. This may need some legislative change. The current statute requires cross-reporting of all reports between law enforcement and the Human Services Agency. The issue here is the definition of reports. Some counties would see this as any call that comes in as a maltreatment report, whether screened in or screened out, would be referred to law enforcement. Some have seen it as if they screen it in, it becomes a report, and that's referred to law enforcement. The current guidance we have from the department is that any call that comes in that is classified as a maltreatment report, whether screened in or screened out, should be cross-reported. But there's inconsistency. This may need a definition in legislation of what a report is. Then the other one that may need legislative action or maybe something the department could go forward is to...
Excuse me, a clarification question from Senator Hayden.
I'm sorry.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Brunfield. I know, Madam Chair, we're not kind of diving into what that would look like, but I do want to understand the cross report. I guess I had never heard that, the cross-reporting and what you guys, how you fleshed that out in the task force and what would that mean. And so if you cross-reported to law enforcement specifically, who would that be and why would they be in a position to look at this differently than the person who initially screened the report out?
Ms. Blumfield.
Madam Chair, Senator Hayden, the current statute requires cross-reporting between child protection and law enforcement. A report of maltreatment could be made to the police, to the sheriff, or to child protection, and either one who receives the report is required to report it to the other one. Child protection looks at the safety of the child and then how to support that child within a family structure, hopefully within their own family, if not within a substitute family, and how to assure that that child does not suffer any further damage through maltreatment. The responsibility of law enforcement is different. It is to investigate whether or not a crime occurred and make a referral to the county attorney. But these two entities work together very closely in protecting children. And so there are some situations that come to child protection that are screened out that may indeed be a law enforcement issue. There are others that come to law enforcement and they're going to take no action, but it is definitely something child protection will work with. So it's assuring that all reports go to both entities and that they do what they need to do with them.
Madam Chair.
Yes, and before you ask a question, what you're talking about now is not in a current recommendation. This is something that you're still, I can't remember what you said about that. In the upcoming legislation, there's something specific about requiring cross-reporting.
Madam Chair, what I'm saying is that it's unclear at this point whether or not there needs to be a legislative change or whether that is simply a clarification that the department can make.
Okay.
And I think that will be up to the department to decide.
Okay. So based on that, Senator Hayden.
Well, good. Well, Madam Chair, I know that that was one of the things that stuck out in the recommendations. It's number 5 that was a recommendation. Now, if it needs a legislative mandate to that or simply just policy change with the department, I guess is what I hear Ms. Brunfield saying, but it is a recommendation of the task force, number 5, and the screening decisions in which to do so.
Could you speak to that? Is this a change of policy?
Madam Chair, Senator Hayden, it is clearly a recommendation of the task force that it be clarified, that all reports, whether or not they're screened in, should be cross-reported. There's not a definition in statute at this point. Does there need to be a definition in statute, or can that be a directive of the department? That will be a decision of the department.
Commissioner Jessen.
Madam Chair, members, this is one of the areas where we found real inconsistencies in the way counties were approaching this. And that's why, even though kind of there was part of the statute that dealt with this, I think the task force felt very strongly that there just needed to be kind of clarity and more consistency across all the counties on the reporting.
And Senator Lurie?
So we don't have to dwell on this too much longer, but I heard Ms. Broomfield say that there was inconsistency, and that's actually where I was going, was the same thing. But at some point I'd like to know a little bit about the pattern of the counties, because this actually jumped out at me too. Are we, you know, involving law enforcement much more thoroughly than we have in the past, and what does that look like, and how does it play out? And so how many counties did follow what this recommendation would be, and how many didn't, and who were they? Is there, you know, I mean, so if there's an inconsistency, how did that play out across the field? And you don't have to answer that today, but I'm going to be wanting to know some of those things as we work for these clarifications. Same on that other clarification, too. Understand that there was some inconsistencies. I'm going to want to know what those look like out in the field to be able to assess.
Thank you. May I suggest that the questions that are coming up on this point are founded in some concern that Senator Hayden, Senator Lurie, and I think we should have that explicitly stated. Is this going to create an unintended what is the issue that causes you to dig into this a little bit? If we could get that clearly stated so that we're sure that what we're designing is achieving what's intended to do without creating an alternative problem. So if we could get that articulated before we come into our next hearing, that'd be great.
Well, okay. Madam Chair, if I may, yes. I think just sometimes with this understanding how, I think as Senator Lori said, how it plays out in the field, and so what would be something that would be screened out that law enforcement would be interested in the inverse of that, and then also understanding how that might have an impact on people thinking about, you know, because I don't want to have this adverse impact that people now start to say, I don't necessarily want law enforcement to get involved, but I'm concerned about this child. And that plays out a lot differently depending upon the relationship that the community has with the agency and or law enforcement. So we don't have to dig too far into that, Madam Chair, today. But I do think that we need to tease that out because not everybody looks at these entities the same. So I just want to know what that impact would be and that we would not necessarily have someone who decides that they have a concern for a child, but if they feel like, you know, the police are going to show up at the door, maybe that stops them from doing that. I would hope that that wouldn't what someone would think, but we know that people have different relationships with different levels of government.
Okay, thank you. Please continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The last of the recommendations that fall into that, we're not quite sure whether or not it's going to require a change in statute, is to amend the mandated reporter statute and screening guidelines to allow screeners to seek collateral information when making a screening decision. At this point in time, the direction from the department has been that you make the screening decision based upon the call that you received or the written report that you received, that you not seek additional information before making that screening decision. One of the recommendations of the task force is that it might be helpful to receive additional information before making a decision to screen in or screen out the report. Is this something that could be guidance from the department, or does it need to be a part of a legislative package? The statute at this point is silent on whether or not you could seek additional information before making the screening decision, not before going further with the situation.
All right. Yes, Senator Lori.
So, you know, as I read, this was recommendation number 7. As I read it, you know, the big question to me was, well, what is this collateral information? Is it through law enforcement? Is it health records? Is it, I don't know what it is. It's not clear in here.
Ms. Blumfield.
Yes. Madam Chair, Senator Lori, at this point, you may have very limited information. You get the call from the school with a concern. Again, we get to the variation between counties. Some counties, if it's on the fence, whether or not it meets the screening guidelines, they're going to take it. Other counties, if it's on the fence, are going to say, no, we're going to screen that one out. Those counties say, if I can make a second call. The school that made this report may have said they think the daycare parent saw something too. If I can make a call to that daycare parent to get additional information, I might screen it in. Currently, the law is silent, and the guidance received by counties is, no, you make the decision based upon that information. And the task force believes it might be helpful to have broader the ability to get more information before making the decision either to screen in or screen out. This really is dealing only with screening. Whether that needs a statute change or whether, because now the practice of counties is directed by the department to not make those collateral contacts, could the department simply give different guidance and bind counties to it?
Well, Sarah Lori.
If we're going to make a statutory change, we're going to have to be very clear about what it is. I mean, are they going to, I mean, are so maybe the report was that something happened maybe, or, you know, in the daycare, can they call the daycare? But if it's too broad, can they call law enforcement and go on a fishing expedition? Can they, I mean, you see where I'm getting at, this collateral information can turn into something a little different if we're not very careful. And I don't know the statute around this well enough.
But Madam Chair.
Some of the concerns that...
Yes, excuse me, Ms. Brumfield.
Senator Lurie, that's exactly why this one needs a little fleshing out. The task force knows we need to look at this issue, but this one still needs some work. And it clearly is a concern if you do too much fishing before you make a decision about whether or not you're screening in or screening out.
Does that complete your report?
No. I do have a few in addition that are clearly things that the department can make changes on in their recommendations of the task force at this point. The first is that making screening decisions should be done in a team-based environment, that we need to use a multidisciplinary approach whenever possible. The input from law enforcement can strengthen those decisions and should be encouraged. At a minimum, decisions should be reviewed by a supervisor. Screeners and or supervisors should consult with the county attorney's office when there's ambiguity regarding whether a case should be screened in or out. Again, a very clear belief of the task force that protecting children is broader than just what social services does, and that particular in the screening decision, the more input you have, the better decisions we'll make. But this is also one where there clearly will be some resource issues. So it's one that at this point is within the purview of the department to make some guidance to counties on how to do this. The next two recommendations, which are number 4 and 6 in your packet, really address the issue around data and the screened out rate within Minnesota. Minnesota, and we've seen this in the papers as well as other areas, has been reported to have a very high screen-out rate of reports compared to other states. So the recommendation, number 4, is to screen in new reports as duplicate reports when they include the same allegations that are currently under assessment or investigations, and when a new report is received that contains different allegations than what's currently being assessed or investigated, the new report will be screened and assigned based on the new allegations. And number 6 is the department should examine and provide stronger direction on how county and tribal agencies are recording reports received, reports screened in, and reports screened out so that future evaluation and use of prior screened out reports is possible. Both these recommendations reflect a concern that our current data is not accurate, and the SSIS system in Minnesota, which is our case management system, is not a data system. The way report information is recorded within the system has resulted in reports showing as screened out and a screened out rate that is not accurately reflecting practice. Pending future development of a new system, which I know you've heard about, the uniformity of data in the current system would provide better information to more accurately explain our practice. The next one that the department can move forward with is number 11. DHS screening guidelines should provide examples of what may be considered when making screening decisions, even when they're made by someone other than a police officer or healthcare provider, including but not limited to reports of driving under the influence with children present, medical neglect reports, and mental and emotional harm reports. This recommendation by the task force goes clearly to the screening guidelines as given to us at this current time, and with a belief that either there need to be clarity to counties in what could be accepted, or potentially more important, clarity to some of the mandated reporters who may believe that they cannot report under those categories. Then there was a system issue as well, which really is a very different issue, and that is number 8, DHS should make information technology changes necessary to ensure accessibility across the system to maltreatment reports, including justification for screening decisions and other pertinent records across counties. It's the belief of the task force that child protection workers need to be able to see additional information within the system as they're making their decisions, and that our current system is not gathering the information that would be needed across counties to review those reports. Transparency. We only have three, and they're high-level recommendations, number 14, 15, and 16. Increase the consistency and comprehensive reporting by counties, agencies, to the Department of Human Services with more specific details to be provided in the final report. Support changes to the child mortality review process in terms of public information accessibility and conformance with federal requirements. Again, more specific details to be presented in the final report. And finally, to refine the annual child welfare report to include a section that identifies themes in data and where the child protection system is improving, as well as identifying potential areas of concern. The work group and the task force do believe that increased transparency is an important component in a more accountable and supported child protection system, but believe we need to get to the more complete recommendations before we can really flesh out how to increase transparency. Overall, just to let me say, the next 3 months will be a lot of work with a lot of input to really finalize some of the larger recommendations that will make substantial changes within the system. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anything on that subject, Carrie? The questions that I'm hearing as a member of the task force, as well as a member of this committee, align very closely to the questions and the discussions that occurred in the committee itself. It is it was through a lot of discussion that when we take a look at the weight of the need to do cross-reporting, for example, or collect collateral information in order to protect the child, that it raises other issues about, fishing was the term I think Senator Loy was talking about, a fishing expedition, or concerns that I think Senator Hayden was referring to, that are we opening the door to allow the police to come in and just do constant investigation in a family's life unnecessarily? And all of that conversation was present, but what we were looking at is how we've taken care of other problems and protected other groups of people, and how much have we done that at the expense of not creating a system that allows us to protect the child? So I'm asking the committee to understand that what you're going to hear from us on child protection is that in this moment and in this time, we're taking a look at child safety, that other issues that are incredibly important that we want to take care of as well. If we take care of them, it may be at the expense of child protection. So that is the critical conversation that will be held when we start to go through the details of the first bill and then future recommendations. Yes, Senator Hayden.
I just have it's more of a kind of a question comment. What those of us that weren't on the task force may not have been able to hear the data that supported the argument. And so I would hope that as we move forward and we bring testimony there, because I think that part of this feels very intuitive and anecdotal, like, because it's based on our experience kind of in the field, and this is what we've seen or heard. And what I'm interested in is understanding the data that helps to tell the story, that if here's what happened when you didn't cross-report, or here's how many times if we would have cross-reported and law enforcement got involved, it would have helped the child, those kind of things, because I think what happens is that I start to have this conversation in the district that I represent and even the ethnic community that I belong to that start to conflict. Like they may have a different take on that, and it is helpful for me as we move forward with these recommendations if I can show them kind of what is happening that is supported by the data.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In response to that, and I happen to be honored to serve on this committee with Ms. Broomfield, too, and if you guys would just take a look at the members that serve on this task force, it's very well dispersed throughout the state, very well represented by all different ethnic groups and folks that need to be at the table. So I believe this subcommittee really did a very good job with the information that was presented that is real out there. Someone, and I keep having my disclaimer every time I come into this subcommittee, that I don't understand this very well, but I'm a quick study on it, that we have silos built up. And as Senator Sharon, Madam Chair, said, we need to look at these silos. There are recommendations, I think, coming down the pipeline that will probably alleviate most of these concerns, I feel, that were presented to us Thursday, that that will take care of some of the issues, hopefully start to take care of some of these issues that you're already seeing. But again, it is about the child.
The we're going to move to the next presentation because we're of our time. Unfortunately, this is going to happen all year long. But I wanted, just before we move to that, I wanted to point to Transparency 15, Public Information Accessibility, and Child Mortality Review. It is my understanding, Commissioner, you can speak to this, that when there is a child's death, as we have had in the state of Minnesota with Eric Dean, that there is a review in the county for a root cause analysis of what the issues were, and that analysis is done and presented to the child protection system, the human service system in that county. But that the capacity of us to be able to fully understand what may or may not have happened that needs changed is protected. And so this issue of our ability to be able to fix something, as Senator Hayden says, what's the data that helps us understand the problem so that as a legislator I know I've got some data, is somewhat problematic because of the transparency issue, which is the case in this review process for Scott County. Is that correct, or would you correct in any way what I'm saying? Because I want our committee to understand how we handcuff our capacity in some ways to do what you want us to do.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Overall, I think you are correct that certainly child mortality reviews are done at the local level, but I don't think we do as good a job as we can, but we are going to require, I think, some law changes to be able to do this, and I know the task force is going to look at that, is how do we bring this together and kind of have this more public discussion about what we can learn from this collectively to improve our system going forward. And so we need, I think, more access. To those reviews, or maybe it's a kind of summary of those reviews that's made more public. Our director of this part of the agency, who comes from the Wisconsin system, was talking with me, sharing some examples of how they did a better job of that in Wisconsin, different legal parameters. But I think that that's one of the – how we do that is something that I think the task force will be looking at very closely.
Thank you. But is this true? I just want to – I know people are asking about the review process that's being done on that specific case, and that is something that really is not going to be presented to the legislature.
I think, Madam Chair, there are limits on all the review and all the things we learn in doing a mortality review, because the department also has the ability to go in if we choose to. We can't do this in all of them. It's primarily at the local level, but we have – expedited some reviews recently, but everything we learn we can't now turn over and share with you, and some of that is appropriate. You know, I mean, there's a level of detail that's very appropriate to keep, I think, but I think it's a different calculus than the law currently makes, and that we need to be able to share more of what we learn with you all.
And that's what we're talking about, trying to find a way to provide more information than we do right now.
Right.
Correct. Okay, thank you. Then we're going to move forward now. Dr. Mark Hudson, thank you so much for coming here today. He was the lead on the Family Assessment and Adequacy of Resources Work Group, and please present your findings, and then that will be followed by Commissioner Tony Carty from Ramsey County, who was our co-chair on the Governor's Task Force.
Madam Chair, Commission members, thank you for having me. I will try to be quite brief. I think I'd like to quickly review the charge to our work group, talk a little bit about what we have learned about family assessment in our work group, briefly run through the recommendations on a high level. Hopefully finish that relatively quickly. The charge to our work group was relatively extensive, to review the pathway, assignment, and supervision of these assignments, examine the rigor, practice, and protocol of assessment and investigation, address opportunities for early intervention and the need for and delivery of services to children and families, whether through family assessment or other avenues, review the cultural needs of families and whether they are being appropriately served by the current family assessment model, consider whether substantial child endangerment should be redefined in statute to require more cases be assigned to the investigation rather than the family assessment, review and assess current and past research on outcomes of family assessment, and consider recommendations about any need for additional research, assess the applicability of family assessment research on current practice, and assess the adequacy of practice as it relates to substantial child endangerment cases. Our work group is also charged with resource and capacity. Our charge there was relatively broad, to assess the adequacy of current state, local, and federal resources for child protection as it exists today. I'd like to start just to talk a little bit about the family assessment, talk a little bit about the difficulty we have had in defining exactly what family assessment is. As a brief background, family assessment really falls under what is often termed alternative response or differential response in other states. And it began well over a decade ago with some of our counties in Minnesota in the 90s moving to to implement an alternative response. The idea or the principles laid out from the alternative response in much of the research literature focus around a few basic principles. One of those being that it is not focused on finding out making a finding of maltreatment, not focused on deciding what necessarily happened in a particular case. It is often reported to be a more family-friendly response. It is a response that focuses on the strengths and needs of families. It is a response that sometimes involves more assessment of concrete needs and provision of concrete needs. What we found as we've explored this and heard from different counties is that the family assessment system seems to be relatively poorly defined. It is difficult for us to actually define what constitutes a family assessment. We've heard from some counties that suggest that family assessment is significantly different. The approaches to families is quite different. There is a deliberate effort not necessarily to focus on any particular single event. Alternatively, we have heard from counties that suggest in their counties the family assessment response and the traditional response are almost exactly the same, with the difference being that the family assessment response does not require or does not have a finding of maltreatment. Minnesota statute suggests that any allegation that alleges substantial child endangerment should receive a traditional or family investigation response. I think we have relatively strong consensus that this is probably not exactly what is happening on the ground. Currently, over 70% of the cases overall are being assigned to the family assessment response. If we look at neglect and physical abuse in particular, well over 70% of those cases are receiving a family assessment response. Some counties, such as Olmsted County, are well over 90% of the responses are going to the family assessment response. Certainly, if we think about the high screen-out rate in Minnesota and the fact that substantial child endangerment does include things like malicious punishment, it is hard to believe that the statute is followed and less than 25% of cases, in some cases less than 10% of cases, actually meet the definition of substantial child endangerment. So with that, I think I'd like to move to some of our recommendations, and I will be on a much higher level, I think, running through our recommendations in the interest of time. I will not review them all in detail, but I would like to talk about some of the themes that we have discussed as it relates to these recommendations and some of the areas where we continue to have considerable discussion. So our recommendations really start in recommendation 17, and I think the task force really unanimously supported that family assessment no longer be defined as the preferred response, which would be a statutory change. Recommendations 18 and 19 really focus as a sort of a broad picture, broad strokes. These recommendations focus more on involvement of the county attorney and involvement of multiple members of the team. what we seem to be hearing and seem to understand as we explore this is that, contrary to what may be suggested on the flow sheet behind me, there are many, seem to be many cases where services are recommended, where the county attorney may not be involved, and those services may be dropped. Again, sort of backing up, and I guess I sort of unfortunately missed a point that is sometimes reported to be the heart of a family assessment or an important part of family assessment is that services are often voluntary. And so what we've learned as we explore this is that sometimes services are offered and maybe services are needed and maybe it's a high-risk situation and it may or may not go to the county attorney for review before that services are basically allowed to be rejected. So the recommendations 18 and 19 really speak to that broader point of involvement of the county attorney in deciding whether they meet criteria for a CHIPS petition. Recommendation 20 and 21 really speak to an area that is quite remains quite contentious at this point. And these both of these recommendations really speak to fact-finding. And certainly in any child protection case, whether it be family investigation or family assessment, there are facts that are gathered. There is debate about what those facts should be. Certainly, as I mentioned, there seems to be great variation across counties in what happens in the family assessment system. In the current family assessment system, as it's interpreted in some situations, there does not seem to be any requirement that the facts be gathered about whether abuse happened or not, whether there is a victim, whether there is a perpetrator. And this is an area that we do feel that fact-finding needs to be addressed. There is a significant debate amongst the task force as far as whether which facts need to be obtained. Do the who, what, when, where, why need to be obtained in every case? This remains an area of debate. Along with that, many times in a family assessment, children might be interviewed in the presence of their family. That might be in the presence of potentially the perpetrator. And this is an area that we believe probably needs to be looked at more closely. Certainly, one could argue that if finding the facts about whether abuse happened or not is not important, it may not be important to interview a child independently. But certainly if we are interested in getting potentially the best information from the child, interviewing that child individually may be appropriate. Item number 23 speaks to our desire to continue to explore the effect of trauma on our children in our family assessment, on our family, in our child protection system. We would like to see more screening for trauma symptoms and more trauma-informed care. Certainly one of the areas we continue to debate is what exactly this would look like. Obviously, we have 87 counties with huge variation in resources. A professional screen by a psychologist certainly is not probably feasible for many counties, but maybe we can be thinking about assessments on the social worker level or the child protection level to be screening for trauma symptoms in children. Item number 24, we're very interested in looking at the outcome measures that we are using to track how we are doing in our child protection system. We're interested in making sure that those are child-centric outcome measures. Item number 25, we're very interested in looking at trying to increase protective factors for the children within our child protection system. Certainly, we know that children in our child protection system are at risk for bad outcomes, bad health outcomes, bad psychosocial outcomes, and we know that addressing and improving the protective factors can help them in the long term. We are interested in re-examining the structured decision-making tools that are currently being used for both risk and safety assessment. We're very interested in looking at some of the indicators that may be markers of what often is termed dangerousness or risk of imminent harm, for example. The child's age may be a factor that we need to consider as thinking about a situation that may be more dangerous. We're also interested in looking at some screening tools potentially that can help to clarify and make better screening decisions if we are to continue to have a two-track system so that our cases are assigned appropriately. Item number 28, very interested in encouraging the use of a multidisciplinary approach that often involves county attorneys, child protection, law enforcement, community professionals in making decisions in the family assessment system. With that, I'll briefly go to our resources. We are still continuing to explore resources. What is clear to our group is that there's been a massive decrease in funding. Our federal funding is at our lowest level since 1998. Minnesota has had a significant decrease in funding for child welfare since 2002. And there seems to be a wide variation in county per capita spending, though more than half of the child protection money is coming from the county level. In the upcoming 3 months, we plan to explore this more, the implications of this. We also know that some of the recommendations that will be coming from the task force will have fiscal implications that we plan to address and help to try to potentially prioritize. Thank you.
Thank you. Was there a question? Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I had several questions. I think they all ended up coming with some of your last points. And maybe because of short time, I'll just ask the questions, and if I could get an answer at some point, it would be helpful. Ms. Johnson mentioned caseload, and I was just curious, and that there are no standards for what caseload is, and I was just curious what the varieties of counties have for caseloads and what task force members think is appropriate. Again, that gets to financing, too, I think. And even like with the recommendation 5 that that Senator Hayden was pointing out, it struck me as when discussion of whether screened-out reports should be recommended to law enforcement, that almost begs the question, are we saying, well, we know we're not sure we screened out appropriately, so we want them to be aware. And I wondered if there are any financial incentives or financial reasons why counties are choosing family assessment so much. Is it cheaper? Do they get incentives for doing that, anything like that? And then finally, and this is maybe more an observation to it, but in that initial flow chart up there, I understand, Commissioner, your point about how in the past it might have been too much law enforcement and not enough human services. Now it may have gone the other way. I kind of wondered why in so many cases it's an either-or, because a whole lot of these with the family assessment, it seems to me that there may be more required, and I think the point one of you was making about maybe Dr. Hudson about the services are not mandatory. They don't have to accept them. But it seems to me that splitting it up and saying, I'm glad, I think the family assessment would be a great thing, and I think we should be having that in all these cases, but not that alone. And I guess that's what I'm wondering. Is that financially the reason we're doing that? So in many ways, all these questions come down to, is one of the reasons we're having these terrible things happen with good, caring social worker folks doing these assessments and stuff, is it a lack of time and money for people to do this?
Yes, who would like to answer that question?
maybe I could.
Commissioner Carter. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I know that our time is limited. Yes. I know that we have to quickly wrap up. I would ask you if you want me in my portion of this to give you the 1 minute or the 3 minute version.
Are you willing to stay a little while? There's no meeting after this. Can you all stay just a little longer?
All right.
That would be great. But just to not lose Senator Marty's request for information, if we've got the questions down here, and we'll be sure that we get that information, including the issue of it's a resource question, or is there something built in the system now that's driving counties to prefer family assessment or driving them to get a better reimbursement or something because of family assessment? So we'll get that. We'll have more time with this, and we may need even more time to review this subject before we take a look at the legislation. I'm going to think this through again a little bit, since people have a deep interest, obviously, in this. So We'll go with you. Yes, Senator.
I'm sorry, if I may. I don't know why I'm on a data kick today, but I think that as you bring that information back, if it can be supported in somewhat with data, either longitudinal data, looking at the correlation between us cutting funding, federal and state funding, if there is a correlation there, or based on what per capita funding that counties give, if there's a big disparity in what one county does, what one county gives to the child protection system or another, and its correlation to family assessment or other investigative tracks. I just think that that is helpful because I think we all kind of come up in our mind with some sense of what that might look like. And I just have a hard time when people tell me that to kind of prove it or disprove it without getting some sense of what that looks like. And I know that when we did the legislative audit report and others, there was such difference from county to county that if we can get some sampling of what that looks like, I think it would be helpful.
Yes, and the resource issue, it is a, you know, 50% of the funding comes from the counties. And about 20% from the state and 30% from the federal government. The counties is a big player in the deal, and there is a big difference between the per capita spending and child protection throughout the counties. We have that data. We've looked at it, and it's something that we can provide. The correlations between these, I don't think we have that study, but you could see from the, even just from these, when you take a look at simply the, you know, I mean, this the neglect, the definitions that Dr. Hudson talked about are really important. What gets screened in, what gets screened to family assessment, it has a lot to do with definitions. But if it's neglect, not enough food, not warm enough clothing, not getting to doctor's appointments, you know, those, that was the basis for the family assessment really being a much better a way to address those issues. It has to do with Senator Hoffman's concern about intent. You know, the family would do a better job if they had the resources. So perfectly appropriate for family assessment. But where are we, and are we driving people into a family assessment that ought really be addressed where the, because there's no authority in a social service system. It's only in the court system that we can say, you need to do these things in order to protect the child. So we'll pull some more data together, and I may consider delaying action on the bill because if the committee really wants to dig in more to what we've learned as a task force, I'm willing to give time to that in the committee hearing because it's a priority for our session to do this job and to do it well. So we're going to take and let you have your whole time, and I'll impose on our committee members to listen. And hope that all of you and any of you that can come back when we continue to work on this, that you do that.
Well, just thank you very much, Senator and Chair, committee members. I would just start by saying that on this point, we're at a critical intersection, and we've talked about pendulum swings. I would want you to know that in Minnesota, family assessment has been adopted as a research of evidence that does show that children within the context of family and within the context of a supportive community can do better in many cases where there is a positive relationship with a family that provides resources and supports needed to strengthen that family. So without getting into additional detail about that, I would say that we need to make certain that we don't ignore there has been science and evidence around that. That said, the pendulum swing can be pretty far if you don't watch it. And we are here to watch that pendulum to make certain that our first focus is on safety for children as we look at supporting them within the context of the family and community. The vision of our task force is to put children first, to ensure that they remain safe and that they are protected as they develop to their full potential. Our task force envisions a system that is committed to the strengthening of families and our communities.
And while safety of children is our primary charge, our responsibility is to make certain that we also support considerations that must be made for all children to keep them safe within the child protection system, including trauma-informed assessments and interventions and care, including healthy child development and child well-being, and also including supports for those families who are living in poverty or who are also affected by trauma. Access to transportation, nutrition services, medical care, child care, and early childhood education, as well as the impact of culture, as you would know, are all important. We have work to get done, and I'll just go very quickly over the fact that our final recommendations are due to the governor by the end of March. We have 6 remaining task force meetings, and we will all be meeting in our workforces to ensure that our screening and transparency, our family assessment and resources, and our training and oversight work groups are able to develop their final recommendations and to refine them. All of our task force members are involved, committed, dedicated, attending, and resourceful to make certain that those recommendations will be fully made at the end of the March timeframe. I'd like to just highlight a few things in terms of the work remaining to be done that we are all very concerned with, and share with you how we are approaching those concerns. In the family assessment arena, as you've heard, there's been very, very much discussion and a lot of diverse views that we are working to resolve. And while we are doing so, we are paying attention to what an expression of that family assessment may or should be in order to determine that we are meeting the needs for safety of our children and for strengthening our families here in Minnesota. In both family assessment and in family investigation, we want to pay attention to, as you have well stated, that the services we are providing and the resources we are providing for children and families are what are needed to keep our children safe and to help strengthen our families. We are also paying attention to observe that in the family assessment, family investigation routes, we are able to develop those strong relationships which will provide for stronger families and children. And we are deciding how and what roles those two tracks may or may not play as we move forward. We are addressing also, and this is very important, the role that family assessment has and can play in the future for addressing disparity and disproportionalities that we see in communities of color, specifically in the African American and in the American Indian communities where the numbers are so disproportionate. In the transparency area, it is our concern to make certain that we are increasing the role of human services, and in particular of the human services performance management system, in monitoring and reporting on child and family outcomes. The department and its regular reporting on child safety and family outcomes is critical. We will be recommending to improve the protocols for review and for public disclosure in the areas of child deaths that will occur or that have occurred in Minnesota's child protection system, and to require that more information be provided to mandated reporters and to those who are involved in the protection and the care of our children. The State Department of Human Services will be looking to provide additional guidelines in the area of practice and state oversight to local, county, and child or tribal child welfare agencies. All of this involves policy and guidance changes, uniformity, you know, as we need to make certain that such great discrepancies in practices are able to be addressed. We need to ensure that services that are offered are completed. And we are at a critical moment right at this point in time. Certainly, this is an area that counties are greatly concerned with. It is an area where counties expend great resources in partnership with the federal government and with the state, We have an opportunity in our state to address the needs we've talked about here with the resources that are needed to ensure that our children will be safe. And in the recommendations that we will forward to you, we will be challenging ourselves, we will be challenging you and our administration to provide for the required resources that will ensure the needs we have in our system are addressed. I will simply leave you with those thoughts and ask if there are any questions for myself and or for all of us who have been before you today. Thank you.
Well, I very much appreciate your all being willing to come and present today. And I really appreciate the attention of the members of the committee to this subject. I would appreciate if you would communicate to me data or information that you're discovering you'd like to have as committee members before our next meeting so that we can be prepared. And as I've said to my committee members, fellow committee members, I'm going to retreat a little bit. I have a plan to have the bill out here a week from Wednesday, but Martin Luther King Day comes on Monday, so we miss another scheduled meeting. But we may really, the committee may feel that it needs more conversation time, more discussion and understanding of data time before taking an action. I want to respect that and provide for that if we need to. So with that, I just want to inform you that that's what I'm thinking about, and I appreciate everybody's attention. And with that, we'll close the meeting.